As you know, there's no real good way of calculating a terrestrial thermal inertia because of the effects of moisture and the atmospheric modeling isn't really there. So we're just using delta T as a proxy for thermal inertia. It's very first order. As far as the other effects, we have been looking at the effects of geometry, orientation of the facets relative to the sun with the dune study I mentioned before. And we're hoping to develop some kind of a correction that, if you know what the orientation of a facet is, you can correct your thermal data with that. But that's not processed yet. So fortunately, the fans that we've looked at all tend to sort of be facing more or less the same way. So that's not a huge effect. But.
Okay, maybe we can pursue that during the reception.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks very much, Jeff. Okay, our next presentation is by Robin Ferguson, Formation and Erosion of Layered Materials, Dust Cycle History of Eastern Arabia, Terra, Mars. Got set to change at 3 minutes.
Okay, how do I work? Is it just page down?
Just
page down.
That's
and we have a laser pointer.
Jeff, what'd you do with the pointer? Did you take the pointer away, Jeff? Did you take the pointer? Oh, no, there it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Robin Ferguson. I was a graduate student for Phil for many years, and at least my generation of students, I was the lone thermophysical student. Everyone else wanted to do composition work. Well, that's not really my forte. As you can even say, I'm studying the dust cycle in Eastern Arabia Terra, so probably one of the dustiest places on Mars where you can't even do composition. So, but as a result of that, I didn't have a lot of graduate students or postdocs that I could go to, and I got stuck. I always had to go to Phil. But a testament to his dedication to his students, I think, is I would come into his office and say, hey, Phil, I have a question. You got a minute? And he's like, well, no, not really, but yeah, come on in anyway. And he would spend 2 hours with me talking about whatever it was I was struggling with or brainstorming different ideas. And I think even as busy as he was, he always did take the time to really work with us and help us out. And I think that is a true testament to his dedication. So I'm talking about the formation and erosion of layered materials and how, okay, everyone looks at layered materials. That's a big fun thing to be looking at right now, particularly with high-rise data. I am looking at layered materials that are in this very dusty area that isn't studied as much because you can't do compositional work. You can't see variations in properties based on their albedo. So it's an area that on Mars that really is overlooked, but I think it's important to look at this. I think it has very big implications for what the dust cycle of Mars might have been, and also some important implications for atmospheric and climate variations in the Martian past. So essentially, this is what I'm going to talk to you about. Hopefully after this, you will be convinced that there are layers, actually layers, in Arabia Terra. But these layers indicate that there's been a significant amount of deposition and even erosion. That's a really big point. There's been a lot of erosion in this classic dust sink of Mars. I personally think, after looking at all of this, that layers were formed by the cementation of airfall dust. You can't rule out the fact that there was probably some volcanic ash in there, and I'll talk to you about why I think that this is at least the best model for this area. And then I'm also going to talk to you about the material that's been eroded in these areas. Currently, this is not the degree of wind and the speeds of wind that are necessary to produce this type of erosion are not currently predicted by global circulation models. And that's something that I think is really important and that I'll hint on more later. So this is my study area. Like I said, this is a test thermal inertia map. This is the low thermal inertia of Arabia Terra. This is in all of the previous talks, this is the blacked out area where there's no compositional information. So no one really studies these areas or looks at them, and I think there's still a lot of important things to learn. So to orientate you a little bit, that's Henry Crater up there. That's within my study area, Schiaparelli. So that's where we're talking about. To give you a little background, Greeley and Guest in 1987 mapped this primarily as dissected and ridged unit material and dated it as late Newarkian and Hesperian in age. The work I've done is consistent with the same age. And basically, the dissected and ridged material is a big crapshoot of a whole bunch of stuff. It's got, ejecta and channels and pretty much everything you can think of. So there's really a rich history, I think, in this area, much richer than just the Aeolian dust sinks that we attribute to these areas. Using primarily tests and some Viking data, the surface is interpreted to be dominated by unconsolidated fines or dust. It has a very low test albedo, a very high test albedo, excuse me, of 0.25 to 0.3. And this is just my study area itself. Arabia Terra has more diverse properties. The test-derived thermal inertia is also fairly low, indicative of dust. The 230 is a little bit higher. I don't know if you noticed the turquoise spots in there. Those are some sand deposits that are attributing to that little higher thermal inertia. And the rock abundance is some of the lowest on the planet. It also has some of the highest concentrations of hydrogen outside the polar regions. I'm no expert in GRS data, but I think this is a problem that a lot of people have been thinking about, and I wonder if some of the things I'm going to be talking about might explain some of this, and I do say might because, again, this is not my area of expertise. So this is a geologic map of the area that I did that's in Ferguson et al. But what I want you to focus on are just these red areas. These are the intercrater mound materials that I'm going to be talking about. I'm not really going to be talking about the rest of it. In each of these cases, you have a significant amount of material that's been deposited, cementated somehow, and you can see at the layer hundreds of layers in these areas at the resolution of both mock and high-rise data. Even these surfaces, though, are likely mantled in a layer of airfall dust. They have an albedo in all cases very similar to the surrounding material. The dust cover index from Ruff and Christensen is also indicating that there are a lot of fines present, and the thermal inertia is very low. So, like I say, we can't really differentiate these layers based on their albedo or based on their composition, but we do know that they're there. And this is a high-rise image. This is just a portion of the high-rise imaging, illustrating that there are lots and lots of layers. The layers are uniform in texture. They all form terraces. This is just from one of the single craters, but this is very similar to what all of the craters look like. All of them seem to have this same texture and terraced appearance, although the thicknesses of the terrace and the degree of exposures do vary. And this is, you can believe me or not, but this is what I think, and I think it's a really interesting and important point. This is material, the lower one is material within Henry Crater. It is directly adjacent to the mound materials. I interpret that to be that this is likely similar material to the mound material that has been eroded. This is area northwest of Henry Crater. It's kind of a pasted-on material. I think, to my eye, they look very similar in their erosional properties, and I think that it is wise to entertain the idea that this mound deposit may have extended outside of the craters themselves. Once you start thinking in that regard, that this was a much larger potential deposit than just within the craters, that can start constraining the possible formation mechanisms. And I will talk about formation mechanisms more, but I think that I was really excited, at least when I saw that observation. Now, the formation mechanisms that I've considered, the first one is paleo lake deposits. This is a pretty popular way to describe the layered materials that we see in craters throughout Mars. And I'm not trying to suggest that some of those other craters may not have been formed by paleo lake deposits. However, I don't think in Arabia Terra that lakes had anything to do with these deposits. There are no obvious source channels. There, not in any crater at all, is there any break in the crater rim to be suggested of a channel that could deposit water or deposit material. The mound heights in some cases are higher than the crater rims, which is kind of a problem when you're talking about deposition by lake. There's also no evidence for shorelines, deltaic deposits, any of these other secondary features that you might find if these layers were deposited by lakes. Another model I considered was the volcanic airfall ash deposit. The closest source that I think would be likely is the Tharsis volcanoes. Based on work done by Glazen Beloga, material from Tharsis was likely only transported about 3,000 kilometers, which is about half the distance to my study area from the Tharsis volcano. So that alone makes it that it's not likely that a lot of volcanic ash has contributed to the mound formation. You can't rule out the fact that some ash has reached these craters and is contributing to these layers. But I don't think, at least from the Tharsis volcanoes themselves, that it's been a significant source of material. What I think is the primary mechanism for forming these layers is the lithification of airfall dust. So a lot of global circulation models have been done in this area, and at all obliquities, at all times of Martian times, this region has likely had atmospheric conditions favorable for dust accumulation throughout much of Martian history. So presumably, you do have dust that is being deposited in this area. Under high obliquity conditions, yes, I'm throwing out the high obliquity card, you could have CO2 or water ice that could sublimate onto and into the surface in this area, thereby forming a means to cement this airfall dust that was there. Maybe something like this could also explain the hydrogen signature again. That needs a lot more investigation. But so you have all these repeated layers, which is indicating that this is a process that's repeated. I mean, you can do that one of two ways, I think. You can either have the obliquity changing 100 or thousands of times, which maybe is possible, or you have kind of the effect of a polar cap sitting on Arabia Terra for at least part of Martian time, and as the polar cap recedes and expands and recedes and expands seasonally, you could then begin to form these layers similar to what we think is forming the polar layer deposits today. So we've been talking about deposition. Let's talk about erosion for a little bit. This is one of the craters. This is a very typical style of erosion for these craters. Here's a mock image, a blow-up of this area. These layered materials erode in a fluted or yarding pattern typically. And this is, again, a type example for all of these craters. I'll just go back and say a little bit more. Both the thermal inertia, there are some areas where I think maybe some of the dust has been removed by sand. In those cases, the thermal inertia is higher. It's in the 400s, which maybe might be indicative of the actual thermal inertia of these materials, indicating that they're indurating fine sediments. Another thing that's suggestive that the precursor material to here was very fine, silt or sand, is one, they're eroding into yardings. Yardings typically erode in a very fine precursor material, but you also see no blocks or boulders or larger rocks in the high-rise data at the base of these mounds, which I think if you had coarser material that you would possibly see some of those. So I think the precursor to this was very fine. This is one of the areas where you do have a close interaction of the eroded material and the sand, where you can get at the thermal inertia of the actual mounds a little bit more in detail. But I think they're primarily eroded by wind. You can erode by a lot of things, but the fluted and yarding pattern, the lack of evidence for channels or any sort of glacial activity implies that wind was eroding most of these, and as Mars is the Aeolian planet, this probably doesn't surprise anybody. However, there was a lot of material that was eroded. I mean, there was a lot of material that was deposited, but if you assume just that they fill the craters, there's been a lot of material that's been eroded. So you had to have wind velocities, one, that were sustainable for long enough periods of time to remove all this material and high enough that you could actually saltate grains. Neither one of these environments, sustained winds at these high velocities, are currently predicted by the GCM models. I think that's a really interesting point. I don't mean to imply in any way that the GCM models aren't robust and great and fabulous, but what I think this might do is begin to constrain what some of the atmospheric properties might have been in years past, particularly maybe there was a denser atmosphere. I know that's an area that they haven't been focusing their models to try and tackle. So I think this coupling of the atmosphere versus to observations that we see on the surface, I think could actually help us better understand the atmospheric and climatic conditions of Mars in years and years past. So this has been a source of a dust sink for many years. People have even thought that there's meters to kilometers of dust in these areas. But some of the global circulation models, what they've come up with is that in years without major dust events, so we're talking no big, huge planet-encircling dust storms, dust devils are important for maintaining the background dust devils, the background dust levels. You do see on Mars that there is a background level of dust always present. There's always dust present in the atmosphere. And one thing I know that Bob Haberle and Melinda Carr have been trying to understand is why doesn't that dust ever settle out? What is this process that keeps bringing it up? And they think it's dust devils. In these same models, though, this area in Arabia Terra is a slight source of dust deflation. So dust is actually being removed potentially by dust devils in these areas. However, you still have a really low thermal inertia. You still have a really high albedo. And in Viking data, you actually saw global encircling dust storms depositing dust uniformly, but then being redeposited from adjacent low albedo surfaces to these low thermal inertia regions. So what I'm proposing is that there's likely a net overall balance of dust thickness in the low thermal inertia, that you don't have meters and kilometers of dust. We've actually reached a state where maybe the level of dust is kind of in equilibrium between these two dust events. One last observation, and I've kind of hinted at this, is that this mound material may be related to other layer deposits, intercrater layer deposits, and other features that we see throughout Mars. You see similar erosional features. You see the presence of these fine scale layers, which suggests that there might be a global formation mechanism or not. I mean, I don't think it would be unlikely that you have material being formed by a lot of different processes, but I think that this consolidation of dust, I think, could be a very important process globally and likely through much of Martian history. So in conclusion, I hope you all are convinced that a significant amount of erosion and deposition has occurred in Arabia Terra. So this also implies that Arabia Terra has not always been an area of dust accumulation. It hasn't been. There's evidence to strongly suggest that other atmospheric phenomena have been going on in this area. I personally think that the thickness of the dust mantle is probably in equilibrium, that we are not consistently accumulating more dust in these areas. I also think that these formation mechanisms, this consolidation of dust, may be similar to and explain other layer terrains found all over Mars. And if that's the case, these types of layer deposits, I think, hold key information to the climate history of ancient Mars. Thank you.
We're going to have to move on to stay on time, but we have a break coming up shortly, so if you have questions for Robin, maybe you can catch her during that time. It's frozen again. Do you know why it does that?
The PDF.
Okay. All right. Okay.